Hello, everyone, and welcome to Minute 2 of Season 4 of Movie Around Minute, the daily podcast, where we take a hilarious, poignant journey through the 1989 Billy Crystal Meg Ryan rom-com, When Harry Met Sally, one minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me again today is Jake Cluett of many different podcasts, but most recently of the Con Air podcast. Welcome back to the show, Jay.
Thank you, Rob. When my Skype started ringing, I knew it had to be you calling me today.
That it did. So today's episode begins with the screen credit of Bruno Kirby and ends with, actually, I want to change that. Today's episode 2 begins with the screen credit of Bruno Giovanni Quarticchiolla Jr. and ends with the second credit for Nora Ephron. So yesterday we talked a little bit about the first minute of credits of this movie, and today we get another full day's worth of credits. Continue along with the list of credits that we talked about, what the commonly used order of credits is. Okay, so today we're gonna first finish up the cast. So we get the final credit of the cast. There's only 4 cast members that are listed here, and the 4th one is Bruno Kirby, who was born, as I mentioned earlier, as Bruno Giovanni Quarticchiolla Jr. He was born on April 28th, 1949, and he passed away on August 14th, 2016. Okay, besides being in this movie, Bruno Kirby is known for being in City Slickers, Good Morning Vietnam. He was in The Godfather Part 2, Donnie Brasco. He was in This Is Spinal Tap also, which is also another Rob Reiner movie. Now, something I found out that was very interesting about Bruno Kirby is that he is actually allergic to horses. And which is
because it would have been tricky then.
Yeah. That's right. He apparently had to get allergy shots every day in order to remain on the set of City Slickers. So that's pretty interesting. Now, I personally have some sort of horse allergy also. So, I found that to be a little interesting. I'm not 100% sure if my allergy is to horses or to like hay or anything like that, but I've had some really, really bad reactions when I've been on horses. So, yeah, I'm sorry. What were you saying, Jim?
You should stop riding horses then.
I did.
I love
horses. I now just watch Westerns. That's it.
He's a delight in everything he's in. When he passed away in 2006, it was tough because he's always, whenever you see Bruno Kirby in anything, it's like, oh great, this guy's he's one of those guys who just makes something better. He's a great character actor. He's got a great look to him. I think I first saw him in Good Morning Vietnam. Is a film I saw probably too young when I saw that one. But he's kind of great. Is that like a Nevishy? He's a guy who's not as fun as he thinks he is, right. Not as entertaining. I can relate, and I really liked his character in there. Just no one really liking him. It's just kind of put upon. And he's always just fantastic. Everything he's in, he's always a nice. I feel like he and Billy Crystal must have been good friends.
He and Billy Crystal were best friends, yeah. And apparently they had some sort of falling out right before City Slickers 2 came out. Or was made. And that's why he wasn't in City Slickers 2. I read that one of the reasons he wasn't in City Slickers 2 was because of the allergy shots that he needed of the horses, but I think it has more to do with the fact that they had a falling out. I don't know what that falling out was. I don't really know what caused that. But it's unfortunate because they have great chemistry together both here and in City Slickers. And he was taken too soon from us. He Absolutely. Died of leukemia at the age of 57. What's really interesting, though, is that his father, who was also an actor, was named also Bruce Kirby. His father's Bruce Kirby. He's Bruno Kirby. But they were both born on the same day. He was born on his father's birthday on April 28th.
Surely, if he's junior, they must both be Bruno Kirby.
Maybe. No, I think his father must be Bruno Giovanni Quarticchiolla Senior, and he's Bruno Giovanni Quarticchiolla Junior, but he's known as Bruno, and his father's known as Bruce. Don't know.
Okay, fine. Yeah.
His father actually, when you know, in an episode that will never air, last year, friend of the show Todd Liebenow and I did five episodes for the Standby Minute of the movie Stand By Me, which didn't work out in the end, but we still had our five episodes, which I probably should release at some point somewhere. I don't know. But we had
like bonus episodes for this one because it's the same director.
Right. Well, we had him in that we had his father, Bruno Kirby's father, Bruce Kirby or Bruno Kirby Sr., however you want to refer to him, was in that scene. He plays the, you know, the guy who owns the little store that Gordy goes to buy the provisions.
Okay.
And the name of the store is Quartacolo, named after, you know, the character, named after the actor himself. So yeah, that was very interesting. Now, one of the first acting gigs of Bruno Kirby was in the pilot episode of MASH, the TV show MASH. Shout out to Tierney of the MASH Minute.
MASH Minute.
Even though I don't think she did the TV shows, but she did talk about them a lot. So he was in the first episode. He played the character Boone, even though he had no lines in that.
Yeah, Godfather Part Two was his first kind of big, first film of his I've seen at least, should we say, as young Clemenza. When I first watched that, I knew who Bruno Kirby was. I didn't know he was in Godfather, so it was like, "Grah, fantastic! He's in this too. Excellent."
Right, and then the next credit we get to is the associate producer Nora Ephron, but we're going to wait and talk about her when we get to her next credit, which I think is more
tomorrow?
Relevant. No, it'll be today, the end of today.
Oh, it's the end of today, isn't it? Yes,
the end of today, the end of today. Okay, the next credits. Now, again, for me, as I mentioned yesterday, what was very interesting is the fact that credits after the actors are done from least important to most important. So knowing that information, you know, then you look at a movie, you know, the credits, and you say, oh, wait a second. So they think that this is less important.
Yeah.
You know, because the first one we get is Nora Ephron as associate producer. So, like, why is she considered then, you know, as a – maybe it's just a tacked-on credit, you know, besides the fact that later we'll find out that she's also, you know, the writer.
Well, isn't associate producer just kind of an honorary title anyway, I think, almost?
It's somewhat of an honorary title, but some of the – you know, according to the list that I read yesterday – so after you have the cast, you usually have casting director, music composer, costume designer, and then the associate producers. But here they actually even put her before any of those. So is that, you know, is that that they're trying to give her more credit for something, or is it that they're taking away the credit? I don't know.
Yeah, I would like either. To say, I don't know.
Exactly. So the next credit we get is the music adapted and arranged by Mark Shaiman. Shaiman. I don't know how to pronounce that, really. Have you ever heard of him before?
No, not at all.
Okay.
I don't often, I'm bad, but I don't pay attention to music and films very often. It's just not something that I tend to notice.
Right. So he's got tons of credits. Okay. He's got 63 credits in the music department, 70 credits on IMDb. He's got 70 credits as a composer. And he has 22 acting credits also. In addition to that, he's listed on 106 soundtrack credits. And all the other self, he's 63. But all the others are pretty, you know, doesn't have that many credits in there. But, I mean, just looking at some of the stuff that he's composed, it's just great. I mean, a lot of it is connected to Billy Crystal or Rob Reiner.
Yeah.
He's done a lot of movies that are related to both of them.
He did another Ellipsis film. He did Rumor Has It in 2005.
There you go. And who wrote Rumor Has It? Wasn't Rumor Has It a... Wait, wasn't
I
that a...
I don't think that's an Aurora film.
No, I thought that was a Rob Reiner film.
It is directed by Rob Reiner, yes. Right, okay. It was written by Ted Griffin. Yeah.
Right.
So I haven't seen it. It sounds terrible.
It was fun, but, it's not...
I didn't realize that was Rob Reiner. The last 20 years of Rob Reiner films are kind of forgettable.
About. Yeah, they're not as good as the original ones. That's for sure. But he was the composer in Misery. And he was a composer for City Slickers. And he was a composer for Sister Act, Mr. Saturday Night, A Few Good Men, Sleepless in Seattle. So, you know, it's just... they keep reusing it north. Exactly. City Slickers 2. Forget Paris. So basically...
South Park, Big Along Red On Car, he did the music and lyrics for.
There you go. The American President. So anything you can think of with Rob Reiner or Billy Crystal, it seems as if he was there.
Team America, World Police.
Yeah. So he's got a lot of credits. He's also done TV credits for the Oscars and things like that. So, you know, it makes sense. That
oh, my God. He composed... Did you watch the Hawkeye TV show?
The which one?
Hawkeye, the Marvel TV show.
Hawkeye, yes. I actually just saw it last week.
So the song at the end, Save the City, as part of the Captain America musical.
Yes.
He composed it.
That's right. I'm making that connection. That's a good point. Yeah, he composed it. I just saw it last week. That's really funny. And I noticed at the time that I didn't make the connection between the you know, between him being here and there. Right. it was a pretty funny musical.
Yeah, it's not supposed to be a good one. It's supposed to be kind of cheesy. And I appreciate it for that and listen to it outside of watching it.
Yeah.
I have downloaded that song. It's great.
Right. And then the next credit we get is special musical performances and arrangements by Harry Connick Jr. So
I had a bit of a brain fart with this because looking at Harry Connick Jr. He's like, he was born in 67. Wait, this film said he was 10 when this film came out? Because this film was set in 77 at the start. Wait a minute. He composed this at 10? But no. But still, 22. 22 when he did this. Ridiculous. Yes.
Yeah, and Rob Reiner found him by accident. You know, he was like talking with somebody. I'm trying to remember of what he said. He was talking to someone of some band. I can't remember right now what band it was. And he said, you know who you should work with? You should work with this guy named Harry Connick Jr. He's great. And he's like, all right, I'll take a look at it. And, you know, as they say, the rest is history, because Harry Connick Jr. is just amazing in so many things that he does. He's a great composer and a great.
I got to do a shout out to the podcast Alka Hollywood, who every year would celebrate Harry Connicker in December with covering another Harry Connick Jr. film.
I actually just saw a great Harry Connick Jr. film last week. But
Independence Day.
I know. Now, I saw a movie called Living Proof, but that's a it was a, I think a Lifetime movie about cancer. But he plays the, you know, the guy who was able to create one of the best to create a drug that is used for cancer patients, for breast cancer patients, and it was a great movie. But he did a nice job in it.
That's good. I recommend the film Bug, the Michael Shannon, Ashley Judd film directed by William Friedkin. He plays kind of a bad guy in that one. That's a film that doesn't get discussed as much as I think it should.
Creepy. Harry Connick Jr. plays a bad guy in some.
I think he. It's been a while since I've seen that, but I think he's like Ashley Judd's, like kind of psycho ex boyfriend or something. Yeah. I remember him being good in it. I watched Michael Shannon because Michael Shannon's great. I think he's a better actor to give him credit for. He's not often given the chance to play more antagonistic characters. Mm-hmm. But then Bug is an odd film, is that who's a bad guy, who's a good guy. But I first saw him, it might have been Independence Day, or it was Will and Grace. I kind of was watching them both around at the same time, where he plays the love interest for one of the characters in Will and Grace, which was very good, and he made an impression. And then, of course, Independence Day with Jimmy. And then I found out he plays the piano and is a musician as well. What is this? He's too talented. Shouldn't be allowed. Like, to be that good of an actor, that talented and that good looking? No, thank you. It's, pick one. Pick two. Three? Ridiculous.
Right. So Rob Reiner found him and used him here. And, you know, we didn't discuss this yesterday, but today the background music continues. Okay, so do you know the song, Jake?
It had to be you. On a blinky blonk piano.
That's right. Now, what do you know about the song? It had to be you.
Well, I know that it's also in several other films, including Casablanca, which is referenced in this film, and Annie Hall, which feels like it should be referenced in this film. But it's, you know, a pretty well-known song. It's been sung by a bunch of people over the time. I don't know who did it originally.
Okay, so it was originally composed by Isham Jones with lyrics by Gus Kahn. And it was done on May 9th, 1924.
That's a long time ago.
Yes. Okay. Yes. 90,
the same year MGM
99
came out.
Years ago. By the time we finish this season, it'll be 99 full years when we finish in May.
That's the same year of the first MGM logo.
Yes, that's true.
I'm learning things. I remember from yesterday.
That's right. There you go. And it became the number one record in the U.S. and remained that way for 5 weeks. And in the end of 1924, it was the number four single of the year. And what's great is it's now in the public domain. so, it's been in a lot of movies. It was the first movie it was used in was a movie called Melody in May from 1936. And then Edward G. Robinson played it on the piano in a movie called A Slight Case of Murder in 1938. And then, as you mentioned, 1942, Casablanca by Dooley Wilson. There's tons here of the movies that it was all listed. I'm not going to go through all of them because there's
surprisingly,
way too many of them.
The film, It Had to Be You.
That's true. Tina Louise, who played Ginger Grant in Gilligan's Island, she actually sang it on an episode of Gilligan's Island, Forward March from 1966. It was in Annie Hall, as you mentioned. It was in the movie Crossing Delancey. Have you ever seen that? With Peter Weygaard and Amy Irving. So they danced to that song. And obviously we know that it's the theme of this movie. And it was also in A League of Their Own, being sung by Megan Cavanaugh.
Shout out to another Tierney Steele.
There you go. So, yeah, it's a song that has stood the test of time, I guess you can say.
Very much so, yeah.
Yes, but it had to be you. What can you do? So then the credits continue, and after we get Harry Connick Jr., we get the costume designer, Gloria Gresham. But again, we're not going to go into all the different costumes that they've all done. Followed by co-producers.
You'll talk about the costumes as the film goes on. I'm sure there's numerous costume changes.
Yes, there are, but I usually don't go into costumes as much.
Oh, maybe your guests will.
Yeah. Maybe. You never know.
You've got to talk about the Billy Crystal's cable net jumper or something when that comes up.
Or how Meg Ryan's character just, you know, Sally just, you know, changes what she's wearing.
There is apparently a site out there that did a full ranking of every Billy Crystal outfit in the film. So
interesting. I will have to look that up. Thank you. Thank you for pointing that out. But since we haven't seen Billy Crystal yet, so we don't know what he's been.
Is he even in this film? Who knows?
No, he's listed that he's in the film. You know,
could just we be haven't a voice. Seen him. Could be animated.
That's true. Mike Wachowski. Right. Then we get two co-producers, Jeffrey Stott and Steve Nicolaides. Okay, then we get the casting directors, Jane Jenkins and Janet Hershenson, followed by the film editor, Robert Layton. Then we get the production designer, Jane Muskie.
Look at and all then, these people. A lot of them did a lot of work with Rob Reiner. So yes. I think he must be a good guy to work with.
Yeah, I'm feeling
keeps the team.
A lot of the people in this movie and in all Rob Reiner, they're part of a team. You're right. There's no question about that. But the next credit is the one that I actually wanted to get to, is the DP. I'm assuming you've noticed that
Barry Sonnenfeld, Barry director Sonnenfeld. Of Wild Wild West and nothing else.
Yeah.
Men in Black, of course.
Yeah, yes. He's a director of 24 movies, and he was a cinematographer only on 16 movies, which is interesting. You know, meaning when he made the jump, he did a... He
committed, yeah.
Yes.
Right. I mean, it's not all movies. He did. Did you watch the Apple Plus show Schmigadoon?
No.
From it's a really good show. It's only a couple of years old. It's about a couple. It's kind of based on Brigadoon a little bit. A couple, Cecily Strong and Keegan-Michael Key. They're in a relationship. They're on like a backpacking holiday. They get lost in the woods and they discover a magical town called Schmigadoon where everyone sings all the time. And it's a lot of fun. I would recommend Schmigadoon. It's a musical TV show. Okay. If you like classic musicals, then you'll find a lot to appreciate in Schmigadoon. But yeah, he directed that. He directed the pilot episode of The Tick, the Patrick Warburton version of The Tick from the 2000s. Fantastic show, if you can find it. Wonderful show. Films. I didn't see them.
Movies, he was the director of both The Addams Family and Family Values. He did Get Shorty, Men in Black, Men in Black 2, Men in Black 3, Wild Wild West. Which I actually just rewatched a few months ago.
Because it's great.
No, because I had forgotten how bad it was.
No, because it's great.
Do you really like Wild Wild West?
I do like it as a bad film. I understand that it is not good, but I still really enjoy it.
Okay, is that a movie that you will be adding to your list at some point?
Not at all. Not in the slightest. I feel like at the end of it, I would hate it. I do not intend to cover that one at all.
Okay, that's fair.
Yeah. It's kind of a shame that Barry Sonnenfeld's most recent film is Nine Lives. Are you familiar with Nine Lives?
No.
The film where Kevin Spacey gets turned into a cat?
No, not for me.
No.
And not interested either.
Yeah, pass. Hard pass.
Yes. Definitely. But so the first real movie that he was the first movie he was cinematographer on was Blood Simple in 1984. Oh,
incredible. Yeah.
Yes. He was also... he was the cinematographer on Throw Mama from the Train, Big, this movie,
Raising Arizona,
Miller's Crossing,
yes,
Raising Arizona, and
such a well shot film.
His final movie as DP was Misery.
Yeah,
which I guess sort of makes sense.
And he was like, never again.
Exactly.
I'm done with that.
And then instead, I'm going to make Wild Wild West. Yes. Then the next credit is the producers. You have Rob Reiner and Andrew Scheinman. And then the final credit of this minute is the writer, written by Nora Ephron.
Yes.
Okay. So what do you know about Nora Ephron?
She wrote a couple of Mike Nichols films before this. She wrote this one. The character of Sally is more than loosely based on her, so much so that when she was ordering... I think she was overheard ordering a meal at some point, and the person, a stranger, stopped and said, "Have you ever seen When Harry Met Sally? You're so much like Sally, the way that you order this meal." And he's like, "Yes, that is me, you fool. Back away. I am Nora Ephron. Get away from me." She went on from this to direct a bunch of films, including some Meg Ryan films that we talked about yesterday.
Yes.
She's a really good writer, and... I haven't seen many of the films that she directed, but she's a very good writer. She's fantastic writing the screenplay for When Harry Met Sally.
Yes. So she was born on May 19th, 1941, and passed away on June 26th, 2012, of a rare form of blood cancer. Okay. She was you mentioned that she had written some Mike Nichols movies. One of the ones that she wrote was based on her own life.
Yes. Heartburn.
That's right. Heartburn. Yeah. Where because she had been married to Carl Bernstein from All the President's Men. Carl Bernstein wasn't from All the President's Men.
The character. Yeah.
No, she was married to the real Carl Bernstein, who was a reporter who...
That character is in... Yes. She wasn't married to whichever one of the two actors played them. I can't remember.
That was, I believe, Bernstein was Dustin Hoffman.
That makes sense. Yeah.
Yeah. So apparently he cheated on her, and she decided to write a I think she actually wrote a novel first about it, and then that was adapted into a movie by Mike Nichols, starring Meryl Streep and Jack Nicholson. Apparently her ex-husband actually wanted to sue her for defamation for the number of things that she says and does in that movie or in the script, but nothing ever really happened with it. In the end. She apparently
Well, that's also, kind of confirmation that everything in that film is true.
Yes. That makes sense. Yes. He threatened to sue her, but he never did. You know, because in the book she wrote that her husband, that the character's husband, was capable of having sex with a Venetian blind. And then she also wrote that the character
that sounds so painful.
Yes. That the character who her husband was having an affair with looked like a giraffe with big feet. That's how she described her.
More stable, I guess.
Yes. She apparently was one of the few people who actually knew the true identity of Deep Throat from All the President's Men. Apparently, okay. Her ex-husband, Carl Bernstein, and Bob Woodward, at some point mentioned it to her that it was, they said that the name was MF, which stood for my friend, but she figured out that it was Mark Felt, who was the associate director of the FBI. And apparently, after she got divorced, she told her son and anyone else who asked, you know, that it was Mark Felt. She said that, a quote, I would give speeches to 500 people and someone would say, do you know who Deep Throat is? And I would say, it's Mark Felt.
I guess at that point, apparently, it doesn't really matter.
No, but no one believed her. She said no one besides her sons believed her. And, it was only, they only mentioned it after Felt died that he was Deep Throat. And that was, decades later. So she was going around telling everybody that it was him and no one believed her, which is pretty funny.
It's MF. It's Samuel L. Jackson.
That's right. That's right. And then afterwards, she got married in 1987 to Nicholas Pileggi, who is a screenwriter. Do you know what he is a screenwriter of?
Oh, the name rings a bell. It's a TV show, I think.
No.
Okay, the name rings a bell, but I can't picture it.
Oh, come on. I have more faith in you, Jay.
I'm gonna have to Google it. I don't know.
Oh, you're going to Google it. If you Google it, you're obviously going to find it out.
Oh, Goodfellas. God damn it.
There you go.
I knew I recognized it. I think I had the novel. I knew I recognized the name.
Yeah, but it didn't say that it was, that it was Mr. Nora Ephron. Yeah.
It should. It should say. It should occur as being Mr. Nora Ephron.
It should. I didn't understand that he said that. He also wrote Casino. He didn't write very many. He wrote City Hall. And then a whole bunch of TV shows. But they all have to do with the mob. That's what it comes down to.
Makes sense.
He's an expert on the mob, apparently.
He produced The Irishman. So, yes.
Yes. that's pretty much all I have to say about this minute. Did you have anything else you wanted to talk about here?
No, we covered it all. Yeah, that's all. Everything's done. Yeah.
All right. So once again, the script has no mention in this in this minute. But tomorrow,
it probably has Nora Ephron's name on it.
But that's that it does, which I mentioned, right? Which I mentioned yesterday. Yeah. But tomorrow we will start getting into the script, and there will be
footage tomorrow.
Yes, tomorrow we'll actually see characters and people talk. Who knows? So every Tuesday we have a segment called Off the Beaten Track, Dating Courting Edition, where my guests will give some sort of story, adventure, misadventure, something that happened to them over the course of their lives that's somehow related to either dating or courting. So, Jay, you got a story for us?
Yeah, so I am what would be politely referred to as a late bloomer in the romance department, in that I have had one romantic partner in my life, and that is my wife. And that was...
There's nothing wrong with that. Why is that a bad
thing? We started dating after I'd finished university. So like prior to that, everything was like, I'm focused on studying. How do these people have time for a partner? There's so much work to be done. And it really paid off because I hate my job. I'm glad I'd spent all of that youth not having any kind of fun. Anyway, so my wife and I, we met through a friend of a friend. It's not an exciting story. So I don't have a lot of romance stories, is basically what I'm saying. But I thought I'd tell you the story of how I proposed. So spoiler alert, she said yes, we got married. But I'll tell you the story anyway. We went on a holiday to the Peak District, which is in the north of the UK. It's a lot of beautiful landscape, lovely place to go. She had been dropping hints for a while of like, if you were to propose, here are some rings that I might like. She has a she had a Pinterest board full of wedding rings. So I ordered one, and it didn't show up. It did not arrive before we went on holiday, which was a shame. So I had to do a backup plan, which was I did a lot of origami as a kid. This may explain also why I didn't have a lot of romantic entanglements. I don't know. But I thought, she's the fan of the origami that I do. She works in craft kind of companies. So I thought I would make her a origami ring before we go, saying, like, there'll be a proper one coming, but this is like a little token until that arrives. Some of your listeners are already saying, like, this guy's an idiot. What are you even doing? Just wait for the real ring. But this is the plan I made. And the only problem was I didn't have time to get any instructions to make the ring before we went away. Things came up at work and stuff. But I thought, okay, where we go away, I'll find instructions online. I'll use that. We get to where we're going. No internet. No phone signal where we're staying. Nothing at all. So we ended up, while she was getting some shopping, I stayed in the car in the car park with our dog. And I was using the Wi-Fi from a supermarket to find the instructions to make the ring. Worked out fine. Made the ring. Great. We then go on a nice walk to this place called Lover's Leap. And I thought, perfect. This place looks really nice. It's called Lover's Leap. It's going to be a great place to kind of propose. We love going on walks together with it's just, thought it'd be a nice place to go. And we get there, very crowded, like hugely crowded people. But the walk we're doing kind of is an out and back. So we go out on the way back as kind of sun's dipping down. It's looking all beautiful. Just I'm about to kind of ask, a huge family show up, the loudest people I've ever met. Just kind of ruin the moment. It's going to ruin the moment. And I thought, God damn it. So we keep walking. And you probably know this, Rob. I'm a very irritating person. It's easy to be annoyed with me. My wife gets irritated all the time. Well, you and I have never met in person, so maybe you don't know. But yeah, I'm quite irritating. She tells me all the time. And I hadn't been purposefully winding her up on the walk, but she was getting quite frustrated that I kept on asking her lots of questions. Just unintentional. I don't know why. It just was happening on the day. But we got to a nice view at one point, which was a field full of cows and sheep. But we like wildlife. And I just thought, the thought struck me, and I just kept on asking her loads and loads and loads of questions for a while. And she's getting so frustrated with me. I was like, okay, just one more question. I got down to one knee and I proposed to her. And she said yes.
Well, at least she didn't start screaming at you right before you did that.
True, yes. A massive group of people didn't show up again and ruin the moment again. But yes, she said yes, and then we spent the whole drive back planning the wedding, which maybe that'll be my story on Thursday. Maybe I'll tell you about the wedding. Who knows?
Maybe. That's if I decide to have you back on Thursday. I might get annoyed with you by then. You never know. Or vice versa.
I'm sure you will.
All right, that is a great story, Jay. I don't know why you downplayed it. It's a great story.
I just don't have lots of like dating misadventures. I went on this one day. It was so bad because I didn't. I went on. I dated my wife and everything went well, and we love each other very much.
Right.
So okay. I don't have lots of misadventures.
Why not?
Been very fortunate.
That still works
in the dating. Yeah.
You know, it doesn't have to be a story that doesn't work. It's just, you know, stories that work out are
we went out for dinner and we went and saw a film and it was nice. Isn't that pretty good story?
Yes, those are the type of stories we're looking for, Jay. For sure. All right, do you want to once again tell people how they can get in touch with Jay Cluett?
Yeah, so I mentioned Con Air the podcast yesterday. My other podcast is Deep Blue Sea, the podcast with myself and Mark Hoffmeyer. We went through the Deep Blue Sea trilogy one DVD chapter at a time. Yes, there's three Deep Blue Sea films so far. Maybe there'll be more, who knows. But you can find out on Deep Blue Sea - the podcast. We've finished doing those films now, but the podcast still lives. We're doing Deep Blue Sea adjacent films, which is films featuring sharks or directed by Rennie Harlan or taking place mostly at sea. So Rob was on to talk about one of Rennie Harlan's first film, Born American.
Yes.
I feel it was better than expected, given that no one...
Wait, the movie or our conversation?
Both.
Both, okay.
And it was a great conversation about a film that I'd never heard of and quite enjoyed. And so other we've done shows on like Muppet Treasure Island is a recent one that we're recording, which is deeply suggesting because it's at sea, and all of the Jaws sequels, mainly focusing on films I hadn't seen before. But we're having a lot of fun, and there's kind of occasional bonus episodes on new releases or the Star Wars Phantom Menace Sea Creatures episode was a fun one. But yeah, Deep Blue Sea the podcast. all of your Deep Blue Sea needs can be found there.
All right, great. And once again, you can find me very simply by doing a quick search for a Movie Rob Minute. You can find me on Twitter. You can find me on my website, movierobminute.com, or you can find me on Facebook. So, Jay, you feel like coming back again tomorrow?
I'd love to. I want to see some people in this goddamn film.
Okay. All right. So until tomorrow, I'll have what she's having.
I'll have what she's having. Gave me a thrill. With all your faults, I love you still. It had to be you. Wonderful you. Had to be you.